to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Judge Gorsuch has not had occasion to rule directly on a case involving Roe. However, his writings do raise questions.
For a judge who likes every outcome he reaches is probably a pretty bad judge, stretching for policy results he prefers rather than those the law compels.
William Paul Young is an extremely dangerous Bible twister who's not bringing to you what Scripture says. He's bringing to you a theology crafted in his own heart.
Northern Michiganders love issues, etc.
It was summertime in northern Michigan.
Most of us who are only passingly familiar with Mormonism don't really understand some of what seems like arbitrary rules that we hear they're supposed to live by. No caffeine, no coffee, no tobacco, no alcohol. Now, there may be health reasons for this because you probably live a lot longer without those things, but is that the original intent of the first Mormons, including the prophet Joseph Smith or their prophet Joseph Smith, in putting some of these dietary restrictions into place? Welcome back to Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, the 28th of March. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Bill McKeever joins us from Mormonism Research Ministry to talk about Mormon dietary restrictions, a piece in the Salt Lake City paper, wondering how much longer they really are going to last. Rebecca Curtis will be our guest after that to talk men's and women's sports in the time of the sexual revolution. And Scott Klusendorf will join us finally to respond to a recent New Yorker column titled "Why It's Become So Hard to Get an Abortion." Bill McKeever joins us to talk about Mormon dietary restrictions and their future in Mormonism. He's founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including, in their own words, a collection of Mormon quotations and Mormonism 101. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
What was the original intent of Joseph Smith and the other founding Mormons, so to speak, in putting some of these dietary restrictions into place?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't know if I have the proper answer for that, but some Mormon historians think that perhaps it was something that Joseph Smith came up with to get back at his wife, Emma, who was upset about a lot of members in the Mormon church spitting tobacco on the floor of her home. And it was getting on the bottom of the dresses of the ladies that were there. Now, that has been told by more than one Mormon historian, but personally, I think it could very well have been an opportunity of Joseph Smith to see just how far he could get his followers to listen to him. I mean, I have to agree with even a lot of Latter-day Saints that some of the restrictions in the Word of Wisdom, as it's known in Section 89 of the Doctrine and Covenants, really seem kind of silly, especially the coffee and tea prohibition, given the fact that in recent studies, it seems like coffee, at least, has almost become a health food to many people. And so it seems to undermine this whole notion that Mormons tend to believe that somehow coffee and tea is injurious to your health, which, of course, science doesn't seem to support that. Whereas in other areas, such as alcohol, that's questionable, especially if you drink too much of it. And, of course, tobacco has led to diseases. We know that. So you might say, well, doesn't that give Joseph Smith a plus? And I would say, perhaps, but it's not like he was the only one that was speaking out on these issues. There were others that were doing it as well.
So talk about this word of wisdom, these words of wisdom. If you got to classify them in terms that non-Mormons can understand, what force do they have in Mormonism?
Well, when it first came out, it was really more of a suggestion than anything else. If you read the beginning of Section 89 in the Doctrine and Covenants, which is a part of the unique Mormon scripture that they have, it says, a word of wisdom for the benefit of the council of high priests assembled in Kirtland. That's where the headquarters of the church was at the time. It says, Kirtland and the church, and also the saints in Zion, to be sent greeting not by commandment or constraint, but by revelation and the word of wisdom showing forth an order and will of God in the temporal salvation of all saints in the last day. So you can see from the way it's worded there, it was more of a suggestion. However, later on, it tended to evolve into something that at least officers in the church during the time of Joseph Smith were supposed to comply with. Let me give you an example. In the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith on page 117, it says, no official member in this church is worthy to hold an office after having the word of wisdom properly taught him, and he, the official member, neglecting to comply with and obey it. Now, what's fascinating about that statement is there are examples written down in Mormon history where it didn't seem that even Joseph Smith followed the word of wisdom, and he was definitely an officer in the church. But yet you have Spencer W. Kimball, who was the 12th president of the church, in the book The Teachings of Spencer W. Kimball, where he says the word of wisdom is a commandment. And he goes on to say, in 1851, President Brigham Young gave to this church the word of wisdom as a final and definite commandment. Now, that raises an interesting question. According to the revelation itself that was supposedly given to Joseph Smith, the founder of the movement, it was not given as a commandment or constraint. But yet Brigham Young in 1851 can override what we are assuming is what God said in the Doctrine and Covenants? That seems odd. You mean a prophet of the Mormon Church has the ability to override a revelation from God himself, if in fact that was a revelation from God, but certainly Mormons do believe it is.
So what exactly is restricted according to that original words of wisdom, and how is it practiced among Mormons today?
Well, it was originally, for instance, the big one that everybody seems to know is the coffee and tea, but it doesn't say coffee or tea in the word of wisdom. It merely says strong or hot drinks. That's what it says. And that's been interpreted a number of ways. Now, today, it's defined primarily as coffee and tea. But in the 19th century, it had a broader application than even that. For instance, George Q. Cannon, who was a member of the First Presidency under Brigham Young, he said that we are told, and very plainly too, that hot drinks, tea, coffee, chocolate, cocoa, and all drinks of this kind are not good for man. In that same sermon, he says, we must not permit them to drink liquor or hot drinks or hot soups or to use tobacco or other articles that are injurious. Now, I don't know of any Mormon today that would include, let's say, hot chocolate, for instance. If that's the case, then there's a lot of people at BYU games watching football that are going to be in a lot of trouble because they do sell a lot of hot chocolate at those football games. So you can see how it could be understood in the 19th century, but now, in the 21st century, it's basically the hot drinks aspect, at least, is defined as coffee or tea. And that has become a huge problem, I think, in their converts and getting converts in countries where such drinks as tea is a staple of life. I remember I've made three trips to Russia, and one of the things that all Russians drink over there is tea because the water is so badly polluted, you don't want to trust just drinking it out of the tap, that's for sure. So they boil their water and they make it into tea. Everybody seems to drink tea over there. Now, can you imagine the Mormons coming on the scene and telling a Russian national that if you join my church, you're going to have to give up your tea? You could see how that could be difficult for many, and that could be a big reason why their convert rate isn't as large as they would hope it to be in the country of Russia.
So how long do these, and they, some of them seemingly arbitrary rules, how are they practiced among Mormons now, and how do do you see them surviving in the next couple generations of Mormons?
Well, here in Utah, I do see a lot of Mormons going by the Word of Wisdom, especially when it comes to the coffee or tea aspect, and that's what you can tell when you're going into restaurants. However, there are a lot of Latter-day Saints that certainly do drink cola products, and for a while there, Mormons were arguing that it was never really the caffeine that was the prohibition, even though it doesn't take very much of a researcher to just do a little bit of background check on that, and you'll find out that the Mormon Church was railing against the caffeine products in not only coffee and tea, but also in things like Coca-Cola, for instance. There were sermons in the early 20th century that definitely were giving the impression that those drinks were to be prohibited as well. Now, here, I don't see a whole lot of Mormons refusing to imbibe in that. In fact, the soft drinks in a big gulp, for instance, you know, that's kind of like the Mormon coffee around here. That's kind of the joke that you hear sometimes, that instead of going with coffee or tea, just go get a large fountain drink like a Mountain Dew that has caffeine, and that'll be okay. That gets you out from underneath the prohibition of the hot drinks aspect. So there are ways of getting around it, even though the Mormon Church in the past has told people that those were not supposed to be drinks, that they should be imbibing. But I guess now they're saying to the people that it never really was the caffeine. That's not really true. There's sermons that show that it was, and they mentioned it specifically. So it's kind of up to the personal choice of the individual Mormon. Some won't even drink cola drinks or any soft drink that has caffeine in it. Certainly many more would not drink coffee or tea. Now, pretty much the tobacco issue, that's pretty much a given. You're not going to find too many Mormons that smoke or chew tobacco, that's for sure. And the alcohol is probably another area that I don't see a lot of Mormons imbibing in that. At least I don't personally know of any that do or have seen any that do.
Where does it fit within their kind of everyday Mormon piety? How would you describe it?
Well, if you do abide strictly by the Word of Wisdom, and you're supposed to, because in order to get a temple recommend, you are going to be asked specifically if you follow the Word of Wisdom. Now, technically, I don't think any Mormon really follows the Word of Wisdom, because when it comes to verse 12 in the Word of Wisdom, it says, "Yea, flesh also of beast and the fowls of the air, I, the Lord, have ordained for the use of man with thanksgiving. Nevertheless, they are to be used sparingly." Now, I don't know of a whole lot of Mormons that really follow that to the letter. I mean, I'm sure that there probably are some vegetarian or vegan Mormons, but most Mormons that I know don't have a problem with eating meat or fowl or anything like that, and they don't seem to do it sparingly. And then that question now becomes, well, what is sparingly? So do Mormons really follow this to the letter? I don't know of many that do, but they are asked in their interview to get their temple recommend if they follow the Word of Wisdom. And I'm sure when they're asked by their ecclesiastical leaders about that, the big thing, of course, is the coffee, tea, tobacco, and alcohol. That's really what's supposed to be coming to the surface on this, to see if that individual does partake of those things in their life.
The Salt Lake City story that we've been making reference to, it does explore the question of whether Mormons regard breaking these dietary restrictions as a sin. What would you say the consensus of the average Mormon is on that?
I would say most Mormons probably think it is. Now, I'm sure you're going to find perhaps some liberal Mormons who might not personally think it is, but the fact is, if a Mormon hopes to get to the temple, to participate in the temple endowment ceremony, which is certainly a part of receiving exaltation or godhood in the next life, they're going to have to tell the interviewer that they follow the Word of Wisdom, because that is a question that is asked of them. So even though they might not personally think it's a sin, they have to answer the question correctly if they hope to get their temple recommend. Otherwise, they're not going to be allowed to go inside.
I'm intrigued by something you raised at the very beginning, and that is kind of your private theory that maybe Joseph Smith, in promulgating these restrictions, was testing the limits of his ability to what kind of dictate the lives of his many followers. Why does that theory intrigue you with respect to Joseph Smith himself and what we know about him?
It only intrigues me in that many times when we find these religious leaders, such as Joseph Smith, it's almost as if, how much power can I really have, and how much can I rule over these people? How much will they really do what I say? And I've always personally thought that maybe this was one of those areas. If he can get a person to give up their coffee or their tea, which even in the 19th century was a big deal to Americans, you could probably get them to do just about anything. And let's face it, Joseph Smith was quite capable of getting people to do things that most of us would think would be impossible, such as marrying another man's wife. He did that, and Mormons might argue, yeah, but that was more in a spiritual sense for the hereafter and not necessarily a physical sense here and now. But Mormons can't prove that. They can only hope that's what it was all about. But there seems to be evidence to show that some of those relations were physical as well as spiritual. So if he can get a person to stop drinking coffee and tea, hey, let's see how far we can take this.
The amazing thing is that it's been generations now. It's been so long, and Joseph Smith is still getting his followers.
Yeah, it is amazing, and especially when it comes to the coffee and tea thing, because there's been so many studies on this that have come out. You have to think that Mormons have read some of these things and are wondering, well, then why aren't we allowed to partake in these liquids? I mean, if there's really nothing injurious to our health about them, what is the problem here?
So finally, what would you say the takeaway is on these arbitrary rules of Mormonism, by which it's kind of the one thing that the average person knows about their Mormon friend? About a minute here.
Well, I don't think that the Mormon Church is probably going to be reversing this position anytime soon. I mean, it could be down the road, but there's been so many things said about it, and the fact that it is a part of the temple interview. I don't personally see them reversing at least the coffee and tea aspect of it, or the alcohol and tobacco aspect of it anytime soon. The cola issue is a little more iffy, and I don't think that's even a part of the interview any longer. I don't think they even bring that up, as far as I know. So I don't see it being changed right away. I could be wrong on that. You know, I'm not infallible, but it doesn't seem likely to me.
Would it just take the current, who is it? Is it Monson now? The current
Thomas S. Monson. You're right. It would. It would just be a matter of him making a decree, the first presidency coming out with a statement, and whatever those restrictions were would be over with.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and Mormonism 101. You'll find a link to Mormonism Research Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, thank you.
Great to be with you, Todd.
Rebecca Curtis is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to spend some time talking with her about men's and women's sports. They are different. Well, doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this one out. They are so different in their levels of performance and even the sports that are encouraged because men and women are different. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Anthony Eslin will be speaking on the topic of imagination and education at the second annual Wittenberg Academy Family Retreat, which will be held at Camp Okoboji in Milford, Iowa on April 27th through the 29th, 2017. Join us and be immersed in God's Word, thoughtful discussions, and family fun. For more information or to register, visit www.wittenbergacademy.org and click on the registration tab.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.